Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
Hi, welcome back to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I am Kate.
And I am Lori.
And today is very important for us to introduce ourselves because this episode is in response to a congregational message that was sent out to the chapel in which named us, even though we have not really named ourselves.
Well, they named us first name and last name, which we've always referred to ourselves only by our first names. And by the way, anyone who's been listening realizes that we have gone to great lengths, twisted ourselves all around, made it actually kind of confusing at times to avoid specifically naming individuals by name.
Yeah. Yep. And then their very first communication publicly, they just go ahead and break that barrier. So.
Okay, then. So, yes, right. Here we are, Kate and Lori.
Sorry.
Yes, it is necessary for us to do a special episode in response.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah.
So in their congregational statement, they actually said some things that we've wanted to hear for a really long time, and that we really, really have hoped to see in their actions. Unfortunately, that has not been our experience. And this is another step in a long pattern of releasing statements like this. So they released a series of the statements that they have made over recent years in response to specific concerns that have been put out there.
Specific sexual abuse allegations.
Right.
That have been brought to them.
Right.
Yeah, they provided links to all of those statements. Personally, I think the interesting thing about all those statements is kind of just the pattern of them. If you read them all consecutively, they all say the same thing, which is kind of nothing.
Right. So we just realized that, we didn't want to just leave that there. Mm-hmm. And just, again, we want to say, trust us. We so very much want the things that they say to be evident in their responses.
Yeah.
There's no reason for us to go through any of this other than concern for the safety of Kate and her family and other victims, and also the trying to bring awareness and make some changes. Mm-hmm. We get absolutely nothing from doing this other than stress. And also, of course, the amazing kindness from those of you who have sent all those supportive messages. It just means everything.
It does.
But there have also been people coming to us about the hurts they experienced at the chapel through the leadership at the chapel. Both people like Kate, who have been more peripherally hurt by their enabling behavior, but also who have been wounded by the leadership to the staff. So we've been hearing more of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. And then in their statement, you know, we'll get to this, I'm sure, but you know, they wanted to make it very clear that my story didn't happen at the chapel, which is not what we said. We did. We never said it happened at the chapel. But the enabling certainly did, certainly is, certainly has been, and is certainly continuing.
Yes, because words are easier, but actions are hard.
Yep.
And sadly, actions have not been consistent with the nice words that are being shared.
Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So there are some very specific things that they said about their responses to this that are just flat out not accurate. And some things that are actually more of a shading of what happened, a shading of the truth, that are maybe not directly inaccurate, but don't really represent what has been experienced by people who've looked to the chapel for a victim-centric response. Like, so some of it is yes, this is not factually what happened. And some of it is, okay, like you're making it sound like, you know, we have only ever wanted to support and help, but that has not been the way the leadership response has been experienced.
So. No, yeah, not at all. And you're right that some things are just actually flat out inaccurate. And then, yeah, some things are just the way that they're saying it, they're twisting words and making it sound different than it actually is. So,
right.
Yeah. So,
so it's things like, did they support the Circle C women? In some ways, mostly when the women were about to go public. Before that, there was more of a reluctance to take a stand. And there was more of a leaning into trying not to rock the boat as much. And we're still hearing from women who are working their way through dealing with the way that they feel about how the chapel responded. So as an aside, Kate, I don't know if we even talked about this, but the Julie Roys report, Julie Roys does a podcast of trying to kind of call attention to abuse allegations in the church. And she actually did an interview with two of the Circle C women. And if you listen to that, you'll hear them, the two women that were interviewed, they kind of talk about the chapel's response with some ambivalence, I guess is the word that I would use. So this is not just us kind of saying, well, yeah, they kind of supported them. No, this is right out of the mouths of the women, and not even because they're responding to us. This was something that was recorded well before us.
But they have responded to us as well. I mean, all day long, I've been getting messages from, you know, people, I mean, all last night too, 2, 3, 4 of the women who, you know, who were involved in that have messaged us and been like, oh my goodness, did you see this response? And they're upset and angry because it's not accurate. You know, they didn't really support them entirely. And there was a lot of feelings that go into that. So,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So did they respond to our concerns about Kate's abusers? Yes. Sort very, of. Very slowly. When there was a lot of pressure, and even more so when the podcast exploded and people whose opinions they value started pushing on them, there was more of a response for sure.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. But even still, I mean, and maybe, you know, I think maybe we talk about this again later, but you know, there are points of, you know, they wrote in the statement that, you know, they weren't in student ministry and they weren't in children's ministry. And it was almost like, so don't worry about it. It's like, oh, okay. But they're just working with trauma victims and trauma survivors. Not a problem.
Right.
You know,
they're adults, so it's okay.
Right. But so, I mean, they kind of made it sound like, well, we did respond to it, but it also wasn't urgently needed to be responded to.
They also referenced the fact that that we've been offered an apology, that Kate has been offered an apology. an apology has been offered by the counseling pastor, which is very nice. Although it did take 2 attempts to get an apology that was really remotely an apology, not like one of those, I'm sorry, you're upset kind of apologies. And I didn't mean it, you know, took 2 attempts, but
honestly, and we talked about this when we named the chapel originally, that the apology that we received from the counseling pastor was very, very, very poorly written, especially the first version. But literally it was like, had I known that you would have been listening when I said what I said from the stage, when I said that I supported your abusers and when I said that I supported your parents from the stage, had I known that you would have been listening, I wouldn't have said that, which is not the same as I'm sorry I said it. It was, I'm sorry you heard it.
Well, and it misses the point that the issue really is why, if somebody believes what we are sharing, that these people sex trafficked their daughter, why would you even feel grateful for being in community with them? Never mind speak it. Never mind speak it in front of all these people.
Right. Exactly. Right. So the apology was really just like, again, they're using that. It's a shading of the truth. The apology was offered. That's not inaccurate. But what the apology was is just so wildly incorrect and inappropriate that it was, I mean, laughable, honestly. And just again, further hurtful, because it was like the level of victim blaming, the level of just, I'm basically sorry that you heard it. Sorry you felt that way. I mean, just, yeah. So no to the apology.
And then for us to have to unpack that is honestly, we don't have time or emotional energy for unpacking a bad apology from someone who should know how to give a good apology.
Exactly. And keep in mind that the apology came from who they consider to be their counseling pastor, a person on their senior staff at the chapel, the counseling pastor who runs the counseling program, who runs the counseling classes, who's training people to do counseling, is unable to write an adequate apology. I mean, that's just mind blowing to me.
It is. And by the way, that apology was only offered after it was asked for.
Right. Right.
So it wasn't offered because there was an awareness on their own that that was unacceptable. Maybe they knew it was unacceptable, but somehow they did not feel the need to reach out and offer an apology.
No, because honestly, yeah, it was like, what, 6 months between when we first went to them and he said the words on stage. And even after he said the words on stage and was told not to say it at the 11 o'clock service, then we started the podcast and then we asked for an apology and then we received a bad apology. So,
right. Right. Yeah,
that wasn't like of their own, you know?
No.
Yeah.
No. So not only was it not a very good apology, it was an apology that kind of put all the responsibility for the mishandling of all of this on one person, the counseling pastor. Okay. For anyone who understands how leadership works and has followed the events of recent years, it is very obvious that this goes far beyond the behavior of one person.
Right.
That is just not how a leadership chain of command works, frankly. But it also, there's no shot that there is not something more systemic that is a problem here.
It is a much, much bigger problem that involves both executive pastors, the lead pastor. I mean, this is not a one bad apple type of situation. That is also a bad apple, but.
Right. Well, and the apology included statements like, in the future, I will make sure to bring such concerns to my leadership so that we can make decisions together about how to go forward. Okay, that's really nice to say, but we know, we have emails to document the fact that the leadership beyond this one person were involved in the conversation at that point. So why say that? Why?
Yeah. And actually in April, 2021, we were so past dealing with the counseling pastor because he was unable to do anything in, you know, what was it, January of 2020? Mm-hmm. You know, so almost over a year later, we were so past the point of even going to him with these concerns and went directly to two of the executive pastors. So that's also inaccurate. Like for him to say, you know, in the future, I will take this to my leadership. Like, no. We took it to the leadership and it still didn't go anywhere.
But yeah, there are lots of things about the chapel's congregational statement that really perplex us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's just so much, but mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's launch into those.
Okay. Let's do that.
It's perplexing to say the least as to why the chapel would use our full names, which we addressed in the beginning. We have only ever shared our first names. Lori has a very thriving practice. And, you know, last night my heart was sad. It was just a really low blow, in my opinion.
So my thing is, this is on their caring well page. So how is it caring well to just blow that right out there? I mean, honestly, people mostly know who we are anyway. I honestly, on some level, I feel like it's a little bit irrelevant. The point is, it's more right, the principle of the matter.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
We have, even now, if you listen to us, we're still kind of not saying people's names because we have tried very hard to respect people's right to choose how public they want to be. Yeah, that's right. Not caring well.
Right. It's one thing to name the entity of the chapel and to name its specific roles in terms of lead pastor, executive pastor, but to use people's actual identity and identifying information, that's different. That's a whole different level of, you know, And like we keep saying, we have literally bent over backwards and done somersaults to not do that. I mean, you've heard our previous episodes where it's like the other executive bastard, you know? So yeah, that was just a pretty low blow in my opinion. But
yeah, it is perplexing. That's the word, because perplexing is the kindest, gentlest word that I think I could think of mm-hmm. to describe. Yeah, some of these things, such as it is also perplexing that they say in their congregational statement, there have been some mischaracterizations of leaders at the chapel made on the podcast that are hurtful. The things that they are calling misrepresentations are things that actually, what has come to us. Okay, so they have not presented specifically to us what those mischaracterizations are, but they were offered to others who have now shared them with us. So I know it's a little bit of a telephone game, but.
Okay. Also really quickly though, they've offered them to a group of pastors who have come forward to hold the chapel accountable.
So from those pastors, you know, because we asked, what are the things that they're saying are inaccurate? Because if you've listened, we really have tried to, so for example, the issue about the board, you know, when it came to us that the board was saying that they only have a fiduciary power, we went back and we made a statement about that. Okay, this is what we're hearing. We said this, but we're hearing that this is accurate. So we're going to correct ourselves. So absolutely. When we heard that the leadership were saying that we made some misrepresentations, we wanted to know what they were so that if we were not accurate, we could fix it. However, the things that they said were inaccurate were things such as that John Camardo did not know about the concerns in 2020. That can be disproven by emails, right? So I don't know what to say about that other than he was looped into a series of emails with Dave Drake. And also there were direct emails between me and John Camardo where I specifically said, I have significant concerns about Wendy being in the role of a counseling person. Right. So I don't know how that's a misrepresentation. So the next thing that they said was a misrepresentation, which I can see why they would say this, is that they said that they were misrepresented when we said that the children of the executive pastor were being babysat by Kate's abusers the day after the full allegations about trafficking were presented to him. They say that that's not true, that that's a misrepresentation. However, that can be, we can show the documentation of that.
And again, we'll post it.
Yeah, text with the FBI agent involved.
Yeah, I literally have text messages from the FBI agent who went to the house, and she texted me and said, your parents were unable to answer our questions because they had the kids there. And I was like, what kids? Whose kids? Knowing that, I'm just going to go ahead and say this, my brother, the executive pastor, had all this information literally days prior.
I think it was maybe just the day before, right? And for all accuracy.
It was
right.
Actually Tuesday to Thursday. I looked it
okay.
up.
Okay.
And I thought that just can't be, because I just told him all of these things. I just like opened this whole door and like his kid, and we've been telling him for a year and a half, don't have them babysit your kids. It's not safe. We're not ready to explain why, but don't do it. And she texts me and says, the kids are there. And I was like, what kids? That doesn't mean, whose kids? We don't know any other kids, you know? Mm-hmm. And I said, my brother's kids. And she said, yeah, your brother's kids. So again, we'll post the text if that's what it takes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So not a misrepresentation, an accurate statement. They also said that another misrepresentation was that I don't know exactly what they meant here. I think they were just saying, well, we did try to offer a female mediator, which honestly, I'm not going to say that didn't happen. I have a vague recollection that perhaps that was in the conversation. I think that the problem is that by the time that was offered, we were well beyond mediation. And by the way, mediation, and this was not a conflict between people. This is an abuse allegation. That is not something that gets mediated.
Right.
Yeah. So can you hear Silas barking?
Yeah. Penny's barking too, actually. So
perfect.
Like the chorus of the dogs.
They're talking to each other. Perfect. Fine. Okay. That's great. Yeah. yes. So the other thing that they said was misrepresented. when we said that they were unwilling to hire Ministry Safe. What they said was accurate is that Ministry Safe told them that they don't do this kind of thing. Of course, we don't really know about what was said in any direct conversation between the chaplain and Ministry Safe.
Which, can I just interject really quickly?
Sure.
My father-in-law, who we did an episode with, who at the time that all of this was unfolding was on staff at the chapel, actually went to both executive pastors, as well as the lead pastor, as well as the board, and said, like, listen, I'll pay for it. I'll pay for Ministry Safe. Like, bring Kimberly Norris back in. I will pay for it. Out of pocket, my personal self, I will pay for it. And they still said, no, we're not doing that.
Right. Although they are now saying that they never said they would not. What they did say, why they say this was a misrepresentation, they said that they went to Ministry Safe and Ministry Safe said that they don't do this kind of thing. However, if you recently listened to, so Neil Boron did a whole week of interviewing Kimberly Norris from Ministry Safe like 2 weeks ago. If you listen to that, you heard Neil Boron specifically say that Ministry Safe can be hired to do abuse response consulting. So I don't know. Is that a misrepresentation? It doesn't seem like it. Doesn't.
And I mean, again, that's information that can be found on Ministry Safe's website in like a 10-minute Google search.
Sure. Right. So it is also perplexing that the leaders have said in their ministry, their congregational statement, upon receiving the allegations in April of 2021 via email, we made the decision to suspend the accused parties who were part of our church from any volunteer ministry service. Okay, so that's perplexing for two reasons. Number one, those concerns were presented in person by me, also in writing, to John Camardo. So this was not made via email. And also, the allegations were shared with John Camardo. Wow, that's a loud motorcycle.
See, I okay. told you were going to be able to hear the traffic.
Okay, there you go.
I know, because it's a nice day and people like love to ride their motorcycles out here. I live like in the wild country. And
wild country.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just straight, wide open country roads out there. Yeah.
Yeah. So you get it, but it's like, yeah, it's loud.
Okay. All right. So also, the allegations were shared on April 13th, and Kate's abusers were not removed from serving until May 3rd, after pressure was exerted from more than one source. Let me also say, as an aside here, we specifically said before, so when we were having these conversations about removing Kate's abusers from their service, we said, okay, there are significant safety concerns here. So please, before you have this conversation with them, give us a heads up so that Kate can be especially on her guard. But that did not happen. So I found out that the conversation was had on May 3rd only because I specifically asked John Camardo on May 4th.
Well, the reason you asked John Camardo is because I got a wildly disturbing threat at my house on the same day that they were that they were removed from service. And you texted him to say, when is this meeting happening? Because she's still getting threats. And he was like, oh, it happened today.
Happened yesterday.
Yeah.
Again, I have those texts.
Yeah. So again, it's like, should we post all of this? Like, do people like,
I don't know. I think people, I mean, we're going to keep a document.
Post. Yeah. But
we keep a document. So if anybody really feels the need to have proof, we'll show you. But yeah. I think hopefully people understand like what, honestly, what is the point of all of this really? Okay. So recognizing also, by the way, that their statement that upon receiving the allegations, we made the decision to suspend the parties. Okay, but that was also more than a year after the initial concerns were brought to leadership about the complicit abuser in her role in the counseling ministry. And that concern was very specific. We listed out what the behaviors were that kind of raised a red flag. And so it took a year plus for them to actually remove the complicit abuser from her role.
Right.
In
the meantime of them not removing the complicit abuser, they're correct in saying that she wasn't working in student ministry or children's ministry, but she was counseling victims of sexual abuse, specifically victims in the Circle C allegations.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So again, they said their statement, and they are not inaccurate when they say she wasn't working in children's ministry, but that's a shading of the reality that is, I don't know.
It's not like she was a groundskeeper, is kind of right. What I want to say. Like, right. We're not talking about someone who's weeding the gardens weekly. This is someone right. who is speaking into human beings' lives and helping them walk through trauma.
At a very vulnerable time for these women.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
So it really doesn't get.
That is very important to recognize, right? She wasn't making food in the cafe.
No.
Right. Okay. Okay. So it is also very perplexing to say, and again, in the congregational statement, the statement is, they remain indefinitely suspended and are not currently attending the chapel. Huh. That's curious because we've been hearing over recent weeks, somebody messaged us saying they were sitting beside me in the service on Sunday. And we've heard from multiple sources that they have been attending spiritual formation classes weekly at the chapel.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Again, you want to see the text? Ask us.
Yeah.
You literally couldn't make this stuff up.
No.
You tried.
No.
Yeah, no. Someone just messaged us maybe 2 weeks ago and said, she sees them and she knows who I am. She knows who they are. And she made all the connections, put the dots together, and she sees them sitting in the spiritual formation class as if nothing has happened. And it makes her sick to her stomach. So to say that they're not attending the chapel is just truthfully just really inaccurate.
And then we've also heard that when someone else heard that they were in spiritual formation and said, whoa, hold on a second, why are they there with these allegations? What they were told is that the spiritual formation class is not actually sponsored by the church, and it's not being taught by someone who's on staff, so they have no say in whether or not these people are there.
Okay, but spiritual formation takes place in the church building. It is also listed on the church's website, and the person who teaches it, his brother and son are both on staff, and he was a chapel staff member for the better part of probably 30 years. So I don't really feel like that's a great comeback.
No. Oh, and by the way, we've also been told that the person teaching the class said, yeah, I wasn't really sure what to say to them. So I went to the counseling pastor and asked him, and he said it was fine for them to be there. Okay. So those are the specific, more factual statements that we can validate objectively if anybody wants to ask, right? But then there are the more the spirit of the law things that really perplex us too. You want to take some of these?
Sure.
Okay.
So why would a counselor who's given the opportunity to preach on a Sunday morning say how he enjoys fellowship with someone who's being accused of sex trafficking their daughter and still get to keep his job? We talk about this all the time. If this was me and my job, or this was Patrick and his job, we'd be out the door the next day. No questions asked. In the real world, in the business world, in like any other world other than the church, there would not be, like, this would not be stood for.
No. And now I'm going to say again, we are also not jumping on the train that lays all of this on the shoulders of the counseling pastor.
Oh, no, I think there's resignations that need to be had all the way around, but
right.
That's a bold statement and I'm sticking
to
it.
Nope. Absolutely. Okay.
But again, it's the spirit of the law. Like, why, like, how does that make any sense at all for this man who, you know, professes Christ and professes to desire to help people in their life and through their most difficult things, the counseling pastor of the chapel at Cross Point stands on stage on Sunday morning speaking to thousands of people at a time and says that he enjoys fellowship with someone who's accused of sex trafficking. It's hard to wrap your mind around it.
Right. It's not just the words. It's the attitude and the heart behind it that exactly. is just unfathomable. And then there's the question of why did we have to ask for an apology twice?
Right.
That, yeah.
Right. Because we had said, you know, apologies are owed basically when after we started the podcast and the executive pastor then all of a sudden out of the blue reaches out to us, haven't heard from him in months. You know, now we're public, so maybe we should have a conversation. And, you know, it's like, well, apologies are owed, honestly. And so we get the one apology, send it back basically redlined. And then we get another apology that's a little bit better, but also redlined.
Right. Right.
But again, yes. We had to ask for those things. We had to say it was important that apologies were given. And then the apology wasn't right. And we had to ask for another one because they still, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Again, there's the spirit of the law problem there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, why would an organization like the chapel think that anyone will believe that a counseling pastor acted in isolation? Again, we're not on board with throwing all of the blame and, you know, responsibility at the feet of the counseling pastor. Is he part of the problem? Yes. Is he the only problem? Absolutely not.
And then there is the, why would it take 3 weeks to remove a volunteer from a role that was as sensitive as a lay counselor when she was accused of being complicit in sex trafficking? Why?
3 weeks. Yeah.
Weeks. And why would the chapel choose that person who did not respond appropriately to her own daughter's plea for support in her own healing from sexual abuse? Why would they choose her to support vulnerable women speaking out for the first time against a powerful leader, the Circle C women? Why?
Well, I just want to also quickly timeline that for people because I keep getting a lot of questions about the timing of what they knew and when. We've already covered this, but just again, while we're responding to this specific statement, I just want to quickly timeline. So January 2020, the counseling pastor of the chapel knew in writing with emails as well as in person that my complicit abuser, my mother, was inappropriate to be counseling victims of sexual abuse at a minimum, but really to be counseling anyone at all. Lori shared information with him about her sharing details of her counselees and their lives with other people, including myself, my dad, my brother, I mean, lots of, you know, her friends, like sharing information about the people that she was counseling. Major, major HIPAA violation there. And so many other violations. So January of 2020 is when the counseling pastor was minimally aware of just that, which should be enough to say she's not appropriate for counseling. After the January 2020 meeting where he was given at a minimum that much information, as well as her terrible response to, you know, me asking for support in terms of my own healing from my own abuse, that, you know, whatever. After that meeting, he then chose to pair women of the Circle C allegations with her, knowing all that information. So I just want to timeline that. And then it wasn't until, you know, April 2021 that the rest of the story came forward. But I just want people to be aware that it was after he was given that much information that he then and told by a professional person with the letters after her name that she should not be counseling victims of sexual abuse, that he then decided to pair her specifically with victims of sexual abuse who were in the midst of going up against, like you said, a powerful leader. Like what? Like what is happening there? How does that happen?
Right. It's not just the actions. It's the heart and the attitude behind the actions.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So then there's also, what would it take for an organization? So why would an organization like the chapel still be saying, we're learning how to do this better, when they have had several very high profile opportunities in just the past few years to tighten their policies and develop strong protocols.
Yeah. And I said this when we talked before we started recording, you know, the fact that they linked all of their different public statements that they've made about different allegations over the years and even in the last, you know, several years, the fact that there had to be public statements about the, if you're doing it correctly, there's no need for a public statement. You're executing your policies and procedures and it should go as it should go. There's no need for a public statement when it hasn't been done wrong. So how many times do you say we would like the opportunity to do it better? You know, if you read through those different statements, they all say the same thing. They're all using the same language. So.
Right. And I guess finally, and maybe most importantly, how is it that a person with fewer resources than Kate, somebody less articulate, somebody with fewer supports, somebody with fewer people sort of in the already existing framework of the organization, right? So Kate's father-in-law, I was already in the existing framework. Kate had like spent plenty of time at the chapel. How is it that someone else with those, without those supports, somebody maybe more marginalized who doesn't present herself as well as Kate does, how is that person supposed to come forward when this is the spirit of what is behind the behavior? Mm-hmm. It's not just the actions. It's the attitude and the heart behind the actions that I just don't know how to make sense of, honestly. I don't. And so I feel compelled to say this. So John Camardo was the person who brought me into the ministry at the chapel that I served with for years. I'm so grateful for that. I enjoyed very much working in that ministry. Like, I don't know how to reconcile, frankly, the responses here with the person who brought me in. I don't know how to. And frankly, I'm not even trying to. We're just saying what happened. We're just saying what happened. You can make your own conclusions about that. I don't know how to explain it, frankly, except it's not okay.
For people who don't know, since we're naming names now, apparently, not you, I mean them.
Yes.
John Camardo is one of the executive pastors at the chapel. Right. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, I was going to say it, right? John Cook is the other one, and he's my brother. So how do you reconcile that? How do I reconcile that? I can't.
No, I don't think it's possible.
And we're not trying to. We're really just stating the facts at this point. What is the thing that you always say that's like makes you sound so old?
Just the facts, ma'am.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's Joe Friday, the Joe Friday thing from Dragnet. Okay, look
can't
it up.
Can't deal with you. I don't even know what any of that means.
Did a remake. There was a Dragnet remake with, what's his name? See, now I'm really old because I can picture his face. But anyway, look it up. Dragnet.
Okay, will do.
Tom Hanks. It was Tom Hanks.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it is. There it is. Look it up. Okay. Oh, my goodness.
So that's basically our response. You know, the point here is obviously, like we keep saying, for me to find safety. Again, things are still, you know, not super safe. But we also want to see a culture change. And honestly, before the chapel released the statement, we were already having conversations about, okay, who can we have on the podcast that can maybe speak to the future? Who can help church leaders to do better in the future and to be more victim-centric and, you know, trauma-informed? And then this happened. And it's like, oh my goodness, like you're still not getting it. But it's not. It is about me, but it's also not. It's for the 1 in 4 women, the 1 in 6 men. We want people to see the church as a way, you know, to find refuge and to find comfort and to be heard and be believed and be supported and all the things that they say they want to be, and yet they are not.
Right. In word and deed. We want to see these things in word and deed.
Yeah, absolutely. So stay tuned for our next couple episodes. They're going to be pretty awesome. But yeah, stay tuned. Keep listening. Keep sharing. Also, I just would like to say, and maybe we want to cut this, I don't know, but thank you to the chapel, honestly, for giving us this opportunity to really bring some of this stuff to light. And also for the 50 plus new followers that we got because of
Yeah, honestly, because we've been trying very hard to, I don't know, we've just been as careful as we can be.
All right. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. And stay tuned.
Good morning. This is Lori here. So Kate and I wanted to clarify a few things about the recording that we shared yesterday in response to the congregational statement. First, someone kindly pointed out to us last night that actually we named ourselves by first and last name in the open letter that we shared, which frankly, we had redacted everyone's names and we didn't even remember that we had shared our own names. So in fairness to the chapel, we just want to acknowledge that, you know, that our statement that they were the first ones to name us is not accurate. Also, I wanted to kind of also clarify the fact that in the recording from yesterday, we talk about the fact that the chapel shared their concerns about misrepresentations with other people, not with us. But I want to make sure that I'm clear that that is not because they went around us. That's because we have been not making ourselves available for a conversation about this. They did, after meeting with the pastors, they did ask for a meeting with me. And at this point, I hadn't followed through on that because the whole tone and demeanor, frankly, still felt very like they were defending themselves, like they were making explanations, like there was not a full acknowledgement of sort of what had gone wrong. And frankly, I don't see the productivity in that kind of a conversation until there is some real acknowledgement that they got it wrong, that it was unnecessary for them to get it wrong, and a true apparent attitude of really desiring to hear and do it differently. So that is not, it's not on them that they did not share those concerns with us directly. That is on us. Our choice was to not sit down and meet with them. So again, please, if there are things that you are aware of that are inaccurate or inconsistent, we're open to hearing that. We want to be as transparent as we can. We want to be as accurate as we can in our telling of this experience. So feel free to let us know. And thank you for the person who pointed out about us sharing our names. If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.